Welcome back to Hour 2 of the Hollywood Casino Press Box, featuring Frank Cusimano and Martin Kilcoyne on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com. My life, I won't let sorrow hurt me, not
like it's hurt me before. Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with Martin Kilcoyne. It's our pleasure to welcome one of the best legal analysts in the business. He's Lester Munson, live from Chicago, where the Cubs were picked to finish last the other day by the Pocota rankings. Lester, your thoughts, please.
How did I know you were going to bring this up to this old Cub fan here? Incredible. Yeah, the Pocota, that is... wonderful bulletin board material for the Chicago Cubs. We'll see what happens. I think Pocota was based on the fact that Yu Darvish cannot pitch, that Cole Hamels is too old, and various other things. So we'll see. We'll see. Cub fans at spring training time are always positive and optimistic, and that's, you know, that's the only way you can be.
But, Lester, is the honeymoon itself sort of over for the fan base? I mean, it seems like Joe Maddon, we know he's got a one-year deal. I know we're going to talk legal stuff, but this is also fun. Are the fans restless right now? They didn't do much in the offseason. They didn't spend any extra money. I know they've spent a ton in the past, but do you think they're restless at this point?
There's no question about it. That's a good way to put it. I think that most Cub fans at the end, when the Cubs lost that game to the Rockies, we thought the next thing would be signing Bryce Harper, and that just has not happened. It's not going to happen. Theo Epstein made it very clear in December that he was not going to be signing any big free agents, much less Harper. The idea was that Chris Bryant and Harper are buddies. They live, they're neighbors. They live in Las Vegas, and it would be a natural. And here we are. We have no leadoff hitter. We have a rotation in center field. We are definitely restless. And the World Series of 2016 remains a high point for all Cub fans, but how long can you exist on that? And Maddon, I frankly am surprised. Cub fans generally support Maddon as a manager. He's a wonderful, quotable character, all sorts of interesting ideas, and I'm not quite sure what the owner and Epstein are doing on Maddon, but yes, restless about Maddon, restless about free agents, restless about the bullpen. That's a very good word for the Cub fans right now.
All right, let's get to one of the hot stories in sports, the Robert Kraft saga. First of all, do you think that there eventually is going to be video out? And secondly, do you think he will serve any time actually in a jail or prison?
The video will make its way out. There are apparently two videos of him inside the Orchids of Asia Spa. You know that sooner or later somebody's going to get their hands on those. I don't think he will do any time, no incarceration whatsoever. It's a first-time offense. The court system has more violent and more difficult criminals to worry about than Bob Kraft. He's got humiliation. He's going to have to pay some money. But he's not going to go away and spend even one night in jail.
And when they brought up the original charges for all people involved at this massage parlor, they said, human trafficking was part of this. If you're a client, is that the right word? If you're a client and some of the employees, is that the right word? Are in the serious offense there is human trafficking. But if you have no knowledge of that, let's just say that was part of what was going on there, which is horrific, but he comes in and is a customer, if that's the right word. But you know what I'm saying is the human trafficking element, if that exists, that's not his fault, so that wouldn't fall at his feet, correct?
No, there's no legal connection between him and the human trafficking. The people who hire those women, who put them into some sort of indentured servitude, if that's what it is, that they are the ones who have to worry about that. He is one of, I think they had 25 customers. And the idea of law enforcement on this is they want to discourage the demand for the service that is being provided, so that if you're driving by the Orchids of Asia Spa and you feel like maybe I should stop in, and then you realize a guy like Bob Kraft has been arrested, you're going to keep on driving and you're not going to stop in. That it's a kind of a classic police approach to something like this, and Kraft happens to get caught, twice in 2 days. It's really pretty incredible and totally embarrassing. But no, I don't. He is not connected to the human trafficking. That's a serious situation. It's something to worry about, but it's not connected to him.
And with the way the league came down so hard on Mr. Irsay in Indianapolis, do you think Bob Kraft is going to be the owner of the Patriots, or do you think it'll transition to his son here?
I think that there probably is going to be a serious fine. Irsay was fined $500,000 for the driving under the influence. I would think that this would be at least $500,000. And as part of a settlement, as part of a negotiation between the league in the form of the Commissioner Goodell and the Patriots, yes, I think Jonathan Kraft could easily come into control of the team a year or two earlier than he might have. That would be a way for the Kraft family to approach Goodell. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to get Bob out of this. We're going to put Jonathan in, and that will allow Goodell to be a little more lenient with Kraft as he decides what is the penalty for conduct detrimental to the league.
Yeah, and the Jerry Richardson case in Carolina was more detrimental to employees, or I guess a climate of sexual harassment, so they force him to actually sell. Who can enforce those rules? I mean, Goodell is in charge, but do you think the owners, can you make somebody sell their team if you're an NFL owner? Is it just the other owners calling and saying, you got to do the right thing? Because can Goodell actually, if he said to Kraft, that's it, you got to go, does he have enough power to do that?
That's a really interesting question. The written agreement that sets up all these relationships is something that, you just cannot get your hands on it. We do know that Richardson was pushed out the door. We also have the example in baseball of Marge Schott being pushed out the door under the leadership of Bud Selig when he was commissioner. And I think it's more...
And Donald Sterling in the NBA, by the way, too.
Now, we did get the Constitution that governs them, and there's a clause in there that David Stern negotiated when he was getting rehired as commissioner that allowed them to force Sterling out of the league. We don't know if that same clause is in the National Football League. From what I've seen of those owners, I would be surprised if they gave a commissioner that kind of power. But no, Sterling that's a different case because of the Constitution. They have all sorts of penalties in that Constitution that the commissioner can lay on the owners. But I think that it will be more exhortation from the other owners then it will be a legal power of the commissioner to force him out. And Kraft, knowing what we know about him, he could decide to resist. He finally put up some resistance in the Tom Brady Deflategate situation, and he may yet decide to do that. I would think it would be too embarrassing, but... Goodell does not have total authority, but he can round up his fellow owners, and then he as commissioner can say, okay, here's what the consensus is. You're going to have to do this, and here's what the penalty is going to be.
Okay, so the city of St. Louis has this major lawsuit against the NFL and the Rams about did they violate the relocation laws when they left, and it was reported this week that the NFL had not been forthcoming with the document request. So if this continues, what legal repercussions could the NFL face?
This is not a big surprise, Frank. I have been watching the National Football League in litigation since 1989, and beginning with the free agent cases that were in Minneapolis in 89 and 90 and 91, the NFL takes a vicious stonewall approach to all litigation. They never give up anything voluntarily. If you're a lawyer and you're in litigation and there's a court order that says you should turn over this document and that document, most lawyers are going to do that, and they're going to be happy to do it because they're going to avoid sanctions, fines, penalties, other things that come along if you don't turn over the documents. The NFL lawyers regard those sanctions as badges of honor. They like to go back to the owners and say, well, we were supposed to give them this and we didn't do it. That just makes everybody feel good, and the owners are happy to pay lawyers to do that kind of thing. They are the most vicious of litigators that I have encountered, and I've been around for a little while. So this is not a surprise. Everything will have to be done the hard way. The judge in St. Louis should get used to the idea of entering sanctions to the NFL, because they're not going to turn things over voluntarily. They just simply don't do that. I'm not sure this judge understands that yet, but he will very soon, because it's not just the Cincinnati Bengals. This is the attitude of all 32 owners. They love to fight. They only have to pay 1/32nd of the fees, and so they're happy to fight and make the other it's like a war of attrition. They think they can wear out the other side.
And what happens eventually is what? The judge will force them? Is this just a tactic to drag it out?
It's a tactic to drag it out. It's a tactic to wear out the other side, to cause them to have to spend enormous sums of money that they would not otherwise have to spend. It's just a way of litigating things. Every now and then you encounter a big business that does this in court. Donald Trump, for example, was famous for it when he was doing his real estate business. The NFL is exactly the same. They love to fight. They will not do anything voluntarily. The judge in Minneapolis in the free agent cases, this is when Gene Upshaw was running the union and they were in the process of getting free agency from the owners. The judge up there, I heard him lecture the owners at least 10 times, and nothing ever changed. They always resisted the orders to turn over documents and to turn over evidence.
So I know you're not really looking at all the documents. You can't. You're not an attorney on this case. But just a gut feeling, you know, in St. Louis, we really feel that they violated the relocation laws and we were misled and there never really was a chance to keep the Rams here. Do you think that this is going to be a positive outcome for the city of St. Louis, or do you think they'll lose this case?
No, I think there's a very good chance for a positive outcome. We already had that settlement for the $24 million back in December. I think there's a good chance in the arbitration that is now pending. And the case that we started talking about, this is the biggest one of all of them. And at some point, I think that the Rams and the league and Kroenke are going to have to settle this case. That they will prolong it as long as they can. They'll try to wear everybody out. But when that doesn't work, then there's going to be a settlement. Or if the case is tried, I think the league has a chance to get clobbered. They have lost big cases before, and I think they have a good the evidence on this, the mendacity involved is such that, yes, it could be the basis for a victory for St. Louis in this particular case.
And Lester, as somebody who's covered sports and legal battles, I would think you could write a book just on the Oakland Raiders franchise. So their current status, and their current status, they're being sued by the city of Oakland, and then they said, "Screw it, we're going to go over to San Francisco." And then the mayor there said, "No, you're not." So they currently have no home before Vegas is ready. I guess there's no real question other than to say this is just classic Raiders, the classic Raider playbook. This is Al Davis's ghost right now.
It's absolutely Al Davis's ghost. He was another one. Nobody loved to fight with the NFL more than Al Davis. You know that he once filed a case against the National Football League claiming that he owned the color black and that no other team could use black in their uniforms. I mean, he litigated everything. And, yeah, if you could find 10,000 Raider fans who can read, you could sell 10,000 books on this. There's no question about it. the story of the Raiders in the courthouse is just phenomenal. It's one case after another. And what if they moved to L.A., they came back to Oakland, and now they have no home, and the stadium in Vegas is not going to be right. I mean, it's the ghost of Al Davis.
And I guess San Diego agreed. Did San Diego agree not to sue? Because so Oakland's fighting, St. Louis is in the court, San Diego, another city that got left in the dust. I had heard that they agreed not to sue. I wonder if they can undo that at any time.
That's a good question. They did agree not to sue, and maybe they're looking back on that now. If they see St. Louis beginning to prevail in this case, they may have to reconsider. It could be that they made an agreement that would be binding them some sort of agreement that would prevent them from filing suit. But there was no indication from San Diego that they were going to fight this. I'm not sure why, but no, the Oakland case, there's a law firm named Covington & Burling, Washington, D.C. They are the primary lawyers for the National Football League. They love the Oakland Raiders. The lawyers at Covington & Burling have become wealthy defending cases filed by the Oakland Raiders. I mean, they if you say Oakland Raiders to this law firm, Covington & Burling, they just smile and laugh because they know that's exactly what they're hoping for.
Call their summer home the Raider home.
That's right. They all have third homes someplace.
And what's your takeaway from the Cohen testimony? And do you think any more evidence was relayed in terms of a Trump connection to Russia?
I don't think there was anything on the Russian collusion, and most of that stuff yesterday was from the guilty plea that he entered in New York City in the Southern District of New York. It was dramatic, and to call the President of the United States a liar and a con man, I mean, that's going to get you on the front page of every newspaper, but the material was all in the guilty plea that he already entered, the one that he's going to do the 3 years in a federal penitentiary, so that as dramatic as it was, and with all the fun people had, you know, asking him questions and making speeches, that there was not a whole lot that is new there. If I had been one of those committee members, I would have asked him whether President Trump had offered him a pardon in return for shutting his mouth. I think that's the most that to me would be very questionable conduct by President Trump, and nobody asked him that. I was amazed that they didn't get into that, because that's the one thing, pardons and commutation of sentences, that can bring all this to a fast end, and they didn't even ask him about it. It was kind of disappointing to me in a way.
Do you think the Mueller investigation will prove collusion or not?
If they had collusion with Russia, this thing would have been over several months ago. So my guess is that the Mueller investigation is going to end with serious disappointments for those who want to impeach the President of the United States. And, you know, he's going to put away Roger Stone, Paul Manafort, this guy, Quadrico, a bunch of kind of low-life political types. But, no, I don't see that there's going to be evidence of collusion. I could be wrong. the one thing that is amazing to me is that Mueller has kept everything under wraps all this time. There's 1,000 reporters trying to get this information, and nobody can get a thing. I mean, ordinarily, you would think that we in the journalism business would have penetrated this thing, but we clearly have not. We clearly have not.
Good stuff. We just got a text into our radio station. Lester is by far my favorite guest, entertaining with solid information. How about that?
You've made my day.
And I love his defense of the Cubs was, well, we got no leadoff, no center fielder. I said, yeah, you're backing up the Pecotas. Thank you. Making the case.
Yeah, we could use a center fielder. Yeah, yep. That's right. Okay.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Martin.
All right. The great Lester Munson joining us.
I feel like I could sit, like, especially a day like today, just sit at the bar with him and tell stories for hours and be entertained the whole time.
I think he was involved with the OJ trial.
Covered it for ESPN for a long time. He was one of the first, I mean, when we were watching SportsCenter, a guy pops up on the TV and it says legal analyst. And you're like, on the sports show?
Yeah.
Legal analyst. He was at the head of the curve. Then Roger Cossack got a lot of coverage on CNN and then went to work for ESPN. Yeah. But I think before it was really an industry, he was one of the first.
I mean, let's face it, really good lawyers have to be able to be just great communicators and know how to get passionate. And he's just outstanding.
And then when he explained, you know, the NFL loves to fight, which we sort of knew. But when he said, think about this, they're only paying 1/32nd of the fees. Hey, that's going to cost another million. Well, we're only in for 1/32nd of that. Hey, that's going to cost $10 million. That's fine. So they can afford to just kind of wear everybody out.
We'll take a short time out. Hollywood Casino Press Box. We'll be right back.